Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. The beautiful game, soccer, is what we talk about this hour of the program, and we figured that we would do this for your afternoon's entertainment. We'll talk about soccer and then the semifinal match at 3 o'clock this afternoon between the Netherlands and Argentina. So that's happening this afternoon, and we figured, why not talk about soccer? Yesterday, of course, was the match where Brazil just went down to defeat, and it was sad for Brazil. Brazil is in mourning, I think, today. There have been all kinds of tweets about what possibly could have happened. They lost, in case you didn't get the score, 7-1 to Germany. And KP found this story somewhere. It's on the Telegraph this afternoon. Evidently, Mick Jagger was a fan of Brazil, and he goes to a lot of these World Cup matches. Superstitious Brazilian fans were so convinced by the curse of Jagger that they took cardboard cutouts of the Rolling Stones singer wearing the opposition's colors in the hope of bringing them bad luck. So everybody's mad at Mick Jagger, for heaven's sake. Give him a break. He came to the games. He's a big soccer fan. My team was Costa Rica. They didn't make it. Remember, we did the show on the happiest country on earth, and I figured we would see complete euphoria in Costa Rica should they have won. Plus, they were an underdog. At any rate, why is soccer so enormously popular all over the world? It's really the national sport in so many countries. Huge numbers of Americans watch the U.S. final match against Belgium. 16 million viewers on ESPN alone. It was the largest rating ever for a soccer match on ESPN. Are Americans still watching the World Cup? Do we tune out when we're not playing? The U.S. is not playing. With so many young people in this country playing soccer, will we eventually see a time when soccer will replace football as the most popular American sport? So that's what we're talking about this hour, and you are welcome to join our conversation. Do you have a team in the World Cup? Have you been following the World Cup? I know that thousands of you have children who have played soccer because it really is the sport, I think, of choice among young children in this country. What do you think of the sport? Should it be our national pastime as well? Mike Pesca joining us, the first part of the show, host of the Slate Daily podcast, The Gist. He also contributes reports and commentary to NPR. He has covered the Super Bowl, World Series, Stanley Cup playoffs, NCAA basketball tournament, the world's strongest man competition, the World Series of poker, Republican and Democratic national conventions, presidential and vice presidential debates, and many other political and just plain interesting stories. Later in the hour, Michael King will join us, the Milwaukee Wave's all-time leading scorer. He's made over 700 goals. He's played for other teams as well. And he's working with the Milwaukee Kickers right now. So we'll talk about youth and soccer. So that's it. That's our story. Mike Pesca, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Yeah, great to have you here. Who called this game the beautiful game? Do you know?
I don't know. I know that that gets ascribed to the specifically the Brazilian style of playing, which is, you know, aesthetically pleasing, and except when they fail to execute it in a spectacular way.
Right.
And it was really Miroslav Klose and Toni Kroos and the Germans who had the moves like Jagger yesterday. And I know a lot of people are looking at that game and using words like, oh, the humiliation, oh, the shame. And it really was a terrible performance because it's just so shocking that Brazil could lose by that extent. They had never even lost in Brazil in a World Cup ever before at all by any score. And then they get decimated. But I look at what the Germans did, and to me, that's beautiful. You know, they just, that onslaught was against great players, maybe great players who had been totally demotivated by the time it was 5-0 early in the first
right.
half. But that, to me, was just a tremendous outpouring by a great German side.
Yeah. And Brazil is not alone in this regard, although they may be at the tops of the list who really embrace soccer as we embrace the Green Bay Packers here in Wisconsin. I mean, people take these teams to their souls.
Yeah, and that is, I think, that gets to the some of the underpinnings of the claims of the popularity of soccer. Now, In America, when the American team was doing well, Americans were very much into it. Americans come out and support their team like some other countries do, but they really do rally behind men's teams, women teams. If it's Americans playing, they love it. Do they love soccer? I think they love Americans playing soccer. There are a lot of demographic reasons why they love soccer, but I would just caution all the people. After America lost to Belgium in kind of a lackluster performance, there were all these articles saying, but it's okay because America, the American team is going to get better, and soccer is poised to become America's big sport. Look at these ratings of the World Cup. And I would just say, actually, you can't compare the ratings of the World Cup to the ratings of, say, Major League Baseball. What you can do is compare them to the ratings of a football game in Milwaukee when the Packers are playing and going deep in the playoffs.
Right.
You can't compare them to the ratings of the Red Sox when the Red Sox are playing in the World Series, because it's not just a team, that is everyone's home team if you're an American. So you have to compare home team to home team, and that comparison would indicate that soccer, though increasing in popularity, is a long way to go.
Yeah. Why is it embraced so fully by so many other countries on Earth? What is it about this game that they embrace?
It's cheap, borderline free. It's democratic. It's, you know, we love basketball, and basketball is another international sport. And there are, you know, a few guys who are just barely over 6 feet tall, which is actually taller than average. But mostly at the professional level, it is a sport for giants. Soccer, you could be of, it helps to be a little bit tall. Greatest player in the world's going in 2 hours. He's messy. He's tiny, you know. There are all sorts of body types. You have to be very fit, but you're not precluded from playing just because you're short or a little skinny or even a little brawny. Brazil has a guy named Hulk who lives up to that nickname.
Who's the greatest player in the world?
Right now, I think it's Messi. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo of Portugal, he was a little hurt, and against the United States, he didn't play well, and he won the latest award as such. But to me, what Messi does is just phenomenal, and he conserves his energy. He moves less than anyone at the World Cup. It doesn't mean he's not trying. It means that he's kind of this genius who sees the game in other ways, and Argentina hasn't actually played that well. In fact, I think there are a lot of parallels between Argentina and Brazil in that they're both South American teams who have great reputations, who are supposed to be good, and who have been winning. But if you really analyze their games, they've not been decimating opponents. But in every time that they need something, Messi gives it to him. He scores against Iran in the 90th minute. He keys their goal in the game before this with a break that is one for the ages. I mean, he's just this brilliant, brilliant player.
Mm-hmm. I think that it must require so much of the human body, Mike, to play this game. You have to be in tip-top shape.
Yeah, it is unbelievably physically demanding, and tennis is too. There are a couple of tennis players who get criticized for their bodies. In World Cup, at the world level, there was a Brazilian, Ronaldinho, who was maybe said to be a little bit chubby. But, man, these guys have so little body fat. And It's not just that. It's lung capacity. And it's that they never come out. You know, there are three substitutions allowed a game, and they never stop moving, except for maybe the goalie and Messi on occasion. But, yeah, it is, you know, how do you define athleticism? There are a lot of different definitions. And so soccer players seem to live up to most of the common, you know, definitions of what it means to be athletic as much or more than any other athlete. And if you look at the two big American sports, there are great athletes on a football field, but there are also guys who are, you know, totally obese. I mean, they move well for large players, but the five offensive linemen are, you know, 300 pounds each. And then in baseball, you don't have to be in good shape at all. A couple players, it helps to be in good shape, but,
right. You
know, baseball players aren't athletes. They're baseball players. Soccer players are athletes.
Yeah. You were on a recent panel I read with Frank DeFord, who's been with us before, and you were talking about soccer maybe becoming the American pastime at some point. His comment was, I don't care how good you are with your feet, God gave us these hands to separate us from the beasts of the fields. Is that one of the reasons that we don't like it very much, because it's not the whole body, just the feet?
Oh, come now. I think that if that was true, then we wouldn't like baseball, because all the one most important guy does is throw the ball. You know, in the American League, he doesn't even bat. I think, DeFord had the good comment. I laid out all the demographic reasons why soccer was becoming more popular, and I do think the fact that so many kids have been exposed to it, and then they grow up, and then their kids have played it, and after a couple generations. But yeah, you know, he's right. So his great line was, I've been hearing this line for 40 years, and I said to him, but Frank, now it might be coming true, finally, for the first time. So it's just a thing that we're not that used to. I think the other good argument against or explanation for why soccer hasn't been that popular was said by Nicky Davidoff, who's another guy on the panel, who said, we seem to love the sports we invented, right? We invented baseball, we invented basketball, we invented football, and those are our sports. And then Canada pretty much invented hockey, and that's maybe our fourth sport, right? Or in Wisconsin, maybe that's 3.5. But soccer just wasn't invented by the United States, and we don't have a long tradition of loving not only sports, but I would argue art forms, right? Country music and jazz music and rock and roll. We invented those, and we're more into those than, you know, classical music or minuets or something.
Yeah, that's true. I'm always interested in listening to the commentators. Maybe my hearing is going somewhat, but they seem to be so in the background of the game when you listen to these people, and their use of the English language tends to be just a little bit more... they just use words that we don't use. There are a lot of sophisticated kinds of words, interesting analysis, historical references. Am I making too much of this, or are they learned?
Well, I will say this. The ESPN announcers, including Ian Dark, who's at the top of his game, we have the best of the best available. So it's not like we're watching, like with football, 16 sets of announcing crews where there are some mediocre announcers. We're getting the best announcers. And due to the nature of soccer, you fill in, there's not that much scoring, so you have to fill it in with your language. And so after a while, you could just say, you know, he pierces down the sidelines, it's an attacking play, the way he knifes through the defense, the way there's so much available to you in terms of the vocabulary, it really lends itself to a floridity of language and also an economy of language. So that's one of the reasons why.
And what about this business of most games yesterday, an exception certainly, that they're very low scoring, or sometimes there's no scoring at all, and they have to go to extra time and to kick in the ball at the end, which is weird if you ask me. It comes down to final how many times you can get the ball in the net in the last couple of minutes after you've played this incredible game for well over an hour. Is it that we like to see people make scores in this country?
Oh, well, I think that's it. And I agree with you in the penalty kicks, because the thing about penalty kicks, even in hockey, and we saw in the Olympics, a game against Russia and the United States came down to a shootout. But that's a 50-50 chance. The goalie has a decent shot at blocking the ball. But the nature of penalty kicks in soccer is they go in 85% of the time. Mm. You know, a good high school player will be able to score consistently on the best goaltender in the world just because of the closeness of the shot and the dimensions of the ball. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's a flaw in soccer. But, you know, when an American starts criticizing the flaws in soccer, it's like if I started criticizing the tempo of a minuet, to go back to that, right? Do I have really the standing to do so? But I think that there are, and the other big flaw, I'm going to call it a flaw. I'm sure defenders of soccer will say that I'm an American and I don't know. But the amount of flopping, pretending to be injured, or at least selling the injury. And I understand why. It's that if you get a call in the penalty box, you get one of those penalty kicks that, like I said, is an 85% chance. You're totally incentivized to do it. But it still rankles Americans and strikes us as unsportsmanlike. And I do think the it's just a disproportionate punishment for a foul in the box. So we saw in a couple games ago, Arjen Robben, who's considered one of the biggest floppers, one of the best players, plays for the Netherlands.
Yes.
He'll be playing in a couple of hours. And he got fouled in the box, or at least he sold to the ref a foul in the box, led to a penalty kick, which he didn't even have to take. The Dutch make it. The Dutch cap this remarkable comeback. I don't know. Something about maybe my Americanness doesn't like that.
Well, he's pretty notorious for doing that, isn't he?
He is, and he's good at it, you know, and it's a decent, around the world, it's seen as a decent enough part of the game. Now, it's not as if American sportsmen don't engage in some forms of gamesmanship, right?
Sure.
In baseball, guys coming around first, you'll see the second baseman pretend he has the ball and do a phantom tag, and maybe if the runner is naive and buys this, he'll slow down. Like, that's just making something up, but within the norms or mores of baseball, that's seen as a fine thing. I don't know. That seems it's considered gamesmanship and not poor sportsmanship, but that's just how, you know, different games have different traditions.
We're talking about soccer this hour. In just a couple hours from now, the semifinals, second of the semifinal games, the finals will be on Saturday, I believe. This afternoon, the Netherlands and Argentina. Yesterday, oh, so much being discussed about Brazil's humiliating defeat to Germany, and we're looking at why this is a beautiful game. Americans' interest, is it limited to just when we're playing soccer? Forget the rest of the world. What happens to TV ratings when other teams are playing? Maybe not the semifinals and the finals, because those tend to be fairly big things, but some of the earlier games. Do you have a team? Later in the hour, we'll be speaking with someone from the Milwaukee Wave who now works with young people with the Milwaukee Kickers. All kinds of young people in this country have been in soccer programs. I know all of our kids were in soccer programs and love the game, and we love going to the game. So will that translate into more and more love for soccer, or are there problems that is low scoring, you can't run as many commercials in a soccer match, so it will never catch on fully. The beautiful game, what do you think of it? Here's our phone number. Join us at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And Mike Pesca is our first guest. He is host of the Slate Daily podcast, The Gist, and he contributes to NPR. He has covered economics, politics, arts, and was NPR's sports correspondent. Mike is with us. So let's go to you momentarily. What do you think of soccer? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the beautiful game, semifinals this afternoon at 3. The other match was yesterday. The World Cup is in progress. What do you think of the game of soccer, the beautiful game? Should it take over as America's pastime? Is it indeed a beautiful game? Do you like watching it? Did you have a team you were rooting for in the World Cup? Do you watch it even though the Americans are out of it at this point in time? What do you think of the skills involved? We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And Mike Pesca is our first guest. Mike, what do you think about some of the dangers in playing soccer? I know there have been a couple collisions, and then we've had controversy, at least among young people playing the sport in America, that heading the ball may not be very good for your brain.
Yeah, my colleague on Hang Up and Listen, which is a sports podcast I do with Slate, Stephen Fatsis, he has kind of taken the lead on saying that kids under, I think the age he says is 11 or 12, should not be heading the ball. I have a 7-year-old. If he does it perfectly, and given his athletic ability, that will not be happening. But if he does it perfectly, I have no problem with it. I think that, yeah, it's a sport, and every sport has its dangers. Every activity has its dangers. It's not to be glib. It's, especially with sports like football, you got to be very concerned about concussions. But soccer seems safer, even though there are a lot of, especially knee injuries and knee injuries among girls. I mean, soccer is an extremely popular sport among girls, and I'd venture to say that more girls hurt themselves playing soccer than any other team sport.
So should there be, I guess there aren't any, I'm just wondering if down the road we will see, as we have with football, that there will be a lot of concussions, and FIFA should be looking and talking with doctors about the consequences of heading the ball particularly.
Well, there have been some long-term studies, and they do indicate that people, men who have headed the ball all their lives, in some cases show some signs. I mean, which is different from the concussion studies in football, which show scads of people who have played football, even sometimes for only a few years, having extremely bad head injuries. And it's just different nature of the sport. I mean, in football, there's no way to do it without getting your head involved and giving hard hits in football. In soccer, you head the ball occasionally, but for the most part, you shouldn't get that injured.
Yeah. Let's go to Doug in Jefferson. Hi, Doug.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm one of the probably rare people that are going to call in and say, I have absolutely no interest in soccer whatsoever.
Really?
I don't watch it. I have tried on occasion. I've watched some games on television. I've actually been to some games personally, both in Milwaukee at one of the soccer fields. I've watched some teams play.
Mm-hmm.
And it just does not interest me. For me, I rate it about the same as watching golf or tennis or something along that line. I just don't have any interest in it. I do like baseball. I like, I guess you could call it American football. But I just, myself, I have nothing against the game personally, but it just does not interest me.
And
the thing that, for me, that I find really kind of hard to understand is, you know, people actually get in fights and riots and
right.
and so on, you know, because their team loses, or, you know, and then what's going on right now in Brazil where the government is being blamed for the loss of a soccer team. You know, I'm sure none of the soccer players didn't lose because of the government. So I just, you know, people may get really passionate about the game. I just think in a lot of ways, I think people are over-passionate about the game. And I'll take any other
okay.
your comments off the air. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, thanks, Doug, for the call. What do you think, Mike?
Well, you know, to each his own taste. I don't know how old Doug is. It does help if you grew up with soccer, either in a country or as a player. And, yeah, there are sports riots around every kind of sport. And given the passions involved, it shouldn't surprise us that there are sometimes an overflow of passions. I should say that the problem of hooliganism, and this was a big problem for a long time, especially in European soccer, it's really been quelled. Now, there are still those there are still hooligans, like, say, in Argentina. They're more than hooligans. They're somewhere between way, way too committed fans and low-level mafiosa. And so that's a problem, but, you know, it's also, you got to get into, it gets into the economics of it. And, you know, there is not, in a lot of countries without a lot of opportunity, the fandom for a soccer team can serve as, it's a commodity. And so if you have, say, great tickets to a game, then you have power. There's a lot of reasons for that, but the soccer is the most impassioned game in a lot of ways, and sometimes there's a downside to that.
Yeah. Rick in Madison is next. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I wanted to say that I've switched my position on soccer. I really enjoyed watching the World Cup this year, and actually in past years, too. I don't watch the professional games that are on other times, but I do like this championship. But my theory, the reason that Americans don't like or appreciate soccer is, first of all, you've never played it like we have baseball, football, and basketball. And second of all, we don't understand the nuances of the game. I watch soccer and enjoy it, but I don't know what a charging penalty is or what some of these penalties. All of a sudden, they're pulling out a yellow card, and I don't understand some of that stuff, and offside and mm-hmm. all that. I think that kind of stuff would really help if somebody gave me a little course on how to appreciate the rules of soccer. Then I might appreciate the game more.
Oh, I would imagine there's a way you can get that information, isn't there, Mike?
Well, you got to just watch more soccer. Or I will say that the offsides rule is something that does confuse a lot of Americans. And, you know, 30 years ago, you'd have a lot of commentators saying, oh, they should just do away with the offsides rule. It's ruining the game. And that is a subtlety because it's really a tactic. I think the Costa Ricans pulled it 13 times against the Dutch. And so and that doesn't seem pleasing because it's sort of using a legality to halt play and to stop what should be the most exciting part of the game. So, yes, I can understand the frustration of the offside rule. And I also think that this just comes from playing, and it comes from growing up and being steeped in the traditions of soccer. And in a generation, you'll get fewer and fewer people saying that. And, you know, big reason why we like baseball, it's not that the rules are easy. The rules
right.
are much more difficult and nuanced, and the rule book is much thicker than soccer. It's just that our grandfather taught it to us, and our father taught it to us.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these familial connections to it, and that's how you learn about anything and learn to become invested in anything.
Thank you so much, Rick, for your call. Ken in Janesville, hi.
Hello. I wondered about helmets in the game. Has that ever been talked about, or what's the situation regarding that? I think it would add a little more excitement to the game.
Well, unless some goalkeepers wear some sort of headgear, especially if they've been injured before, and given the state of parenting, I know that some leagues at least offer it for their players, you know, like sixth graders, fifth graders, so forth. They buy helmets for like all the sports teams, so you can wear them while you're playing girls lacrosse or boys soccer or whatever. But yeah, it's the head injuries aren't that huge a problem, and when you're at the kind of works itself out in a way, because at the lower levels, it's not that much of an aerial game, so there's not much heading of the ball. And when you do see people collide at the highest levels, well, they're, you know, sometimes the most highly skilled people, so they're safe and they mostly know how to head the ball correctly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Ken, for your call. Our number, by the way, we're talking about soccer, the World Cup this hour of the program. Should it be America's pastime? Do you see a time when it ever will be? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. I think it was Germany, and you certainly will know this, Mike. I was watching one of the matches, and they were talking about the practice facility that Germany built in Brazil that cost millions of dollars to build. Do a lot of other countries do this? Do they build these elaborate practice facilities just for the World Cup?
It's not every team, and you know the United States team did not build in a custom-built training facility. But yeah, I mean the German facility is 15,000 square yards.
Wow!
And they have all these bedrooms, and you gotta think that's one of the reasons they're doing
right.
So well. You turn this foreign continent into a home field. Now I gotta say, especially if Netherlands wins, it's going to break this trend where no European team has ever won in this hemisphere, no South American or North American team, but no North American teams won anywhere, has won in Europe. But that's a little bit, there's an asterisk there. In the early days of the World Cup, you'd have to get here by boat, and so a bunch of beleaguered Frenchmen would stagger onto the shores of Uruguay in 1930, and they really had no chance. And then I should also point out that when the United States hosted it, it did come down to penalty kicks, and that's when Brazil beat Italy on penalties. And so since I say those could go either way, it's true, Brazil did win, but Italy had a very good shot at winning it. Yeah. So this goes to the how do you take foreign soil and make it your own?
Right. And it's been so hot there and humid. It must be hard to play soccer for anybody in those conditions. They're sweating.
Yeah. And we've seen an innovation, which is the water break, the sanctioned water break. And the first time it happened was in a U.S. game, and they were playing in Manaus, which is in the middle of the Amazon. And gosh, you want to talk about, I would characterize it as a boondoggle, the stadium that will never possibly get filled again, that was used for, you know, less than 10 games. Although I've been told that the people of that city are really quite proud and are less ambivalent even, or less negative on the World Cup than some of the people in Rio and Sao Paulo. However, you know, that is so hot there that they let the guys take water breaks. And that's good. I think that's great. That's a great example for us children playing the game for leagues. I do think that whole idea of, like, don't take water breaks, that'll toughen you up, that's pretty much been driven out of sports, at least in this country. So it's good by the World Cup doing that. Maybe, you know, some youth league in Mexico or somewhere else will say, hey, maybe we should give them a water break.
Right, yeah, good idea. David in Montello, hi.
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 I learned to play soccer about 40 years ago in college, and played as long as I could find a team to play on, and then coached little kids for about 13, 14 years. And I think that soccer will take off in this country and become a major sport when we have a generation of parents who have played it and become as unpleasant as baseball parents and hockey parents and football parents and basketball parents. It was a delight to coach little kids when their parents had absolutely no clue what was going on, and way more fun than and I coached up to high school and college, and by then you started seeing people who knew what was going on, and that's when the parents became unpleasant. And I think that's kind of when it's going to catch on as a major sport in our country.
Well, we're almost at that.
And I have loved the World Cup. I have loved it. It's been fabulous.
Yeah. We're almost at that stage, aren't we? Because a lot of those children are having children now.
Sure, absolutely. Very close. My kids grew up playing, and they're having kids, And they will be the unpleasant parents, I'm sure, when their kids start playing. And I'll try not to be an unpleasant grandparent, but I can't promise anything.
Well, you certainly know better, David, right?
I do know better.
Exactly.
Yes, I do know better.
So you probably won't be one of those. What do you think about that? It's going to take more of those young people growing up right now. And then it may take over from football, Mike?
I don't think it will ever take over from football. I think football is more than just the most popular sport. It's sort of the most culturally ascendant institution in America as everything else falls away. And as our culture is fractured, football just gains momentum and steam. However, for us to say soccer is the most popular, soccer is very popular, you know, we are right now a country of 318 million people. If soccer were the fifth or sixth most popular sport, and by some metrics, like actual average attendance at professional games, it is, it could still be a really sustaining and healthy sport. It could still be a huge pastime. I do think it will help that kids play it and that kids' parents played it. But I caution about thinking that there's a strong correlation between participation and fandom. What I always point to is jogging. Jogging is extremely popular as a participation sport, but good luck getting anyone to show up at a track meet. So just because you do something doesn't mean necessarily that you want to watch something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see your point. Thank you so much, David, for your call. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Peter is calling from somewhere in Iowa. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I've got a question about what I would call hatchet men. I haven't played much soccer, but I did play a lot of basketball. Basketball is a contact sport like soccer where you don't wear equipment. And in this latest World Cup, I'd like you to comment specifically on biting and kneeing a guy in the back. And I'd like you to comment more generally on what you see as the potential for hatchet men entering more and more soccer.
Well, the biter in question is Luis Suarez, who's the Uruguayan player, and he's an exception. I mean, he is such an exception and such a outlier that he was banned for 9 games for what he did. And it's not as if the soccer establishment countenances this guy. He's this extremely talented guy who occasionally will bite. Now, there is a boxer named Mike Tyson who did that too. And, you know, I would say that Suarez was sanctioned more heavily than Mike Tyson was. A knee in the back, yeah, injuries are part of the game. That he's referring to the Colombian player who fouled Neymar, the great Brazilian, but it wasn't even a dirty play. I mean, people go up and legs get, you know, thrown somewhere. In an average NBA game, there are as many fouls, or probably more fouls, more elbows to ribs, and more contact on the body than soccer. I don't think soccer is dirty. I don't think soccer is being overrun by dirty players. I think that referees have a really, really hard time in adjudicating all the penalties. It's extremely tough, but unlike the referees of all sports, then we go back on the super slow motion replay and we see if the referee got it right or wrong. Well, guess what? He wasn't watching it on the super slow motion replay, and the super slow motion replay can choose which camera to take it on. So they have 20 cameras trained on the action, and the one with the exact right angle can show that the referee screwed up the call, but the referee's one set of eyes standing in one place and he can't be everywhere. So I don't think that this is a particular problem for soccer dirty play.
One more phone call for you, and then we'll go to our soccer player, Tom in Nelson. Hi.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I worked over in Germany for 3 years in the early 90s, and all you could watch on a Sunday afternoon was the soccer games. So I kind of learned the nuances and whatnot of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I generally don't watch it other than when the World Cup comes on, then I'll watch every game because that's such a big deal. The thing that gets me is the flopping and the faked injuries.
Uh-huh.
I mean, those guys roll around the ground in agony. They get carried off on a stretcher, and 30 seconds later, they're back in the field running around.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing that drives me absolutely nuts, and that's what I wanted to. Oh, the other thing, I was thinking about the changing demographics in the U.S. with having more Hispanic population.
Mm-hmm.
The popularity of the game might increase here.
Yeah, good points. Mike?
Oh, that's definitely true. The demographics are definitely in soccer's favor, and it's not just the browning of the U.S. It's, you know, different attitudes towards cultural, taking bits of other cultures. You know, I think that we're in more of a montage type cultural situation. I agree. I think the flopping is tough. And I love those stretchers. They're like World War One stretchers. You would never
yes.
want to put a truly injured person
on there.
And then the other thing, this is a tell, like poker players talk of tells. If a person is really hurt, like when Neymar was hurt, he clutched the part of the body that was hurt. But once they cover their face, once they go for the face, you can pretty much know that they're faking.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for being with us. Have fun watching the game this afternoon.
I will. You're welcome.
All
right.
Take care. Yeah, Mike Pesca hosted the Slate Daily podcast, The Gist, and he also contributes commentary reports to NPR. He's covered all kinds of areas for NPR, economics, politics, the arts, was NPR's sports correspondent, and he has covered the Stanley Cup playoffs, the World Series, the Super Bowl, the NCAA tournament, and, of course, most important, the World's Strongest Men competition and the World Series of Poker. We're going to continue. Michael King will be joining us in just a moment, a big-time soccer player in this country who now works with the Milwaukee Kickers, so stay with us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the beautiful game this hour of the program as we are again in a day when we have a semifinal match in the World Cup. Michael King is joining us now. Michael is a native of England, and he is the Milwaukee Wave's all-time leading scorer. He's a key full-time member of the Milwaukee Kickers coaching staff since 2007, was recently inducted into the Wisconsin Youth Soccer Association Hall of Fame. He played professionally not only with the Wave, but also with the team in Cleveland, Dallas, Baltimore. He's one of only five players in North American professional indoor soccer history to record 700 career goals. He also holds the record for the most played indoor games. Michael, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
We've been talking about this generation, and you're coaching some of them and working with them who are now playing soccer, and so many young people are playing soccer. Tell me about how widespread it is, Michael, and because of how widespread it is, if indeed it may indicate that soccer will become America's sport at some time.
Well, yeah, I've been in the country 30 years now, and to see where it was 30 years ago to see where it is now, it's truly remarkable. You know, there's soccer fields popping up all over this country in places that you wouldn't really expect to see them, and it just shows the broadness of the game now. I think you know, I was listening to some of the stuff that was said earlier on your show, and this country's got so many diverse groups within it. You know, it's the beauty of this country. And since soccer's the sport of the world, then those people are just bringing that to their communities and their groups and families. And it's just going to continue to grow. And I think the other sports are a little scared of soccer, to be honest with you, because of how it's growing. And, you know, you need the future of the game, and that's the youth, which we're heavily involved in. And our numbers are mushrooming. And obviously with the excitement of the U.S. men's team in the World Cup, as well as the women's, they've had a great lot of success. It's just all moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you started to play? And tell me about the path to becoming a professional player, Michael.
Yeah, well, I grew up just like any kid over here, you know, playing baseball, you know, just you know, kicking a ball around, growing up in the streets of London, and going through the youth path over there, which is starting to become similar, or American path for the youth is starting to become similar of how it is somewhat in the bigger countries, in the sense of, you know, there's a place for the kids to play at the different levels. You know, you've got your beginner kids, you've got your kids that are in some sort of organized soccer at a recreational level. Within that age range from 7 to 10, 7 to 11, there's some more advanced level programming now being introduced. And then from 11 years and up, you've got the full range of programs. From, you know, novice and people that don't really want too much besides just having fun and a practice a week and their games, to teams that are probably practicing three or four times a week, extensive travel and commitment all the way up to a national level where some of the top players are being recruited, not just here in the U.S., but also overseas. There's that level of talent. So that's where we're at and the direction it's going, because, you know, the World Game is looking for talent, and they will go to the four corners of the globe to find the next Messi or Ronaldo, or that's just the nature of the business. They want to find the next world-class player.
Yeah. It strikes me, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, but you as a player can tell us how hard it is, how physically taxing it is to play this game. Does it really wear you out?
Well, it's the training that you've and the upbringing that you've had. You know, I think, you know, if I look and see what it takes to be an Olympic swimmer, you know, I can't really understand how they can do that for so long, because it's not something that I've done on a daily basis.
Right.
I mean,
right.
to be a top at any sport, it's a lifestyle, it's a choice, you know, and a desire and a commitment. And it is very tiring at times, but looking back on it now, I never really wanted to ever get out of shape, because the hardest thing was to get into top shape, you know, the level that is needed to play at the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
That was the hardest thing, because when you're constantly practicing to try to achieve something, you know, you're building off of something. But when you're up the top, and then you drop down a little bit, trying to get back up to the top level, if you had an injury or something, is even harder. And there is a lot of running involved, and, you know, and I tell the kids, if you don't like running, you're probably not going to be a big lover of soccer. So it is, you've got to be athletic, you've got to be willing to work hard, both on and off the field. I mean, it's you've got to do a lot of work practicing on your own with the ball, even though it's a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, but it's also very rewarding, because, you know, it's given me the ability to travel all over the world and, you know, and to meet different people in different, you know, countries and different societies. It's been a great door opener to different things in my life now through soccer.
I'm sure it has. Let's go to some phone calls for you. Frank in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Frank.
Hiya. I was wondering if your guest could comment on whether he thinks that it would be good for Major League Soccer to introduce a proper pyramid of promotion and relegation, which would mean that teams would be able to both support locally and grow into the top leagues organically, rather than have somebody try and guess where a franchise is going to succeed or not.
Yeah, I think the idea of trying to mirror what is done in a lot of the other countries with promotion and relegation, I think it's something that could possibly happen down the road, but I think we're still trying to establish our sport, and it's hard enough for the average American sports fan to understand the intricacies of the game, let alone throw promotion and relegation to them. Looking at how baseball is, and I wish that there would be promotion and relegation in that, but there's not. So if they're not doing it over here in the other major sports, it's going to be tough, I think, to throw it into soccer. But I think it's definitely something that, you know, should be looked at. But in sports over here, we want parity. You know, I mean, you have the draft. You have the worst team every year getting the first choice of the best players. Now, that is, I still have a hard time with that in America, you know. But it's something that has been around for such a long time, and it appears to work, and they like it. So I guess you're going to have to deal with that, you know, for a few more years until they decide to change that.
Michael, would you say that the rules of soccer are rather complex or not?
No, it's a relatively simple game. You know, there's probably one rule that most people struggle with, and that's the offside rule.
Right.
Outside of that, it's a very basic, simple game. You don't need a lot of specialized equipment. You know, you don't need some special field. You just can go out there and play. And I think that's what makes the game so so loved around the world, is because it's a very simple game.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can play it. Doesn't matter your size or gender. It's a very easy game.
Thanks, Frank, very much for the call. Joanne in Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Yes. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Joanne.
I'm not a big soccer fan. I'm a big tennis fan, and I'm glad to hear that your previous guest acknowledged what a tough sport tennis is. But I think for Americans to be more interested in soccer, they should consider changing the length of the game, making it, say, 60 minutes, and making sure there are at least three breaks, timeouts of a minute each, so that there can be advertising, and that would be more attractive to television networks, and it would be shown on American TV more. That's my suggestion.
Thanks, Joanne. Those are interesting points. What do you think about them, Michael?
Well, over the years, they've tried experimenting with things like that. But when I came over here, I looked at American baseball and tried to figure out how they could shorten the game with that. You know, you're chipping into a sport that's been around for many, many years. It's created a love and passion for many, many people all around the world. So why do we want to mess with it and change it into something that it's not? We've made the indoor game because it came about because of you having cold weather cities and wanting something to do in the winter months. So we have variations, but the actual game itself, if you look everywhere else in the world, it's pretty much played in a fall, winter, and spring. So to put in breaks and shorten the game, you're going to change the nature of the activity. So you train for an activity to be able to do it. So I think, let's look and see how there's ways to, if it's a case of advertising, then maybe we want to do some other things around the game, like signage around the side of the fields, which has changed dramatically over the years. Advertising around the screen on TV, the advertising needs to adjust to the game, not the game adjust to advertising.
Oh, but this is America, Michael, where advertising is king, right?
Yeah, but tell me this then. How come there's five American owners owning professional teams in England? They get it. They understand it, and they know there's money to be made. So I think, the game is still being shown on TV over here. There's still people watching it, and 45 minutes is a lot different than 3.5 hours sitting in a game watching a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I get a little miffed sometimes with watching it. I watched a tennis game the other day that lasted for four hours at Wimbledon.
Mm-hmm.
So, 45 minutes before you take a break, it's not that long.
Thank you very much, Joanne, for your call. Last call, Stephen Keel. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to, it was kind of touched on a little bit by Joanne, but for Joyce. My wife and I are both in our 50s, never played soccer in high school or college or anything, but love the game. Both of our kids play middle school, high school. In fact, my wife was a coach. And the biggest thing we find that's, in fact, we remember seeing Michael down at the Milwaukee Wave games a lot because we took the teams down there to watch him play. But anyway, the most frustrating thing we find, and in fact, today is a frustrating day for us, we're having to go somewhere where we can get ESPN reliably so we can watch the Netherlands game. Yesterday, we were watching Germany. Seemed like every time our computer did a buffering thing, it was during a score. So what I'd love to see is more regular TV channels playing it. That's somewhere that we've got to subscribe to get it.
Right. Michael, how about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously we spoke a little bit about the financial side of it and, you know, the advertising. I mean, it is part of the equation, and we've just got to keep, you know, encouraging more people to watch it. And if it's a numbers thing, then, you know, the next time in 4 years' time when the Olympics comes around or the men's national team have a game, try to get as many people to watch it. Because at the end of the day, if the numbers demand it, then the TV stations will have to put it on regular TV. You know, that's what it's just going to come down to.
Yeah.
And the numbers are growing, and we've just got to continue to support the game and encourage people to get involved in supporting the game. You know, the NHL didn't grow overnight. The NFL neither did that. It took a number of years for it to get the backing and get the support. And soccer's going to be no different. You know, I mean, like I said, I've been here 30 years and it's grown tremendously in 30 years. We've still got a ways to go. But, you know, I think at some point in the not too distant future, we will see, you know, a lot more games on regular TV.
Michael, thank you so much for being with us. Michael King, who is now he played professional soccer for a long time, one of only five players in North American professional soccer history to record 700 career goals. He is now working with the Milwaukee Kickers, interested in soccer. It's a huge organization working with children of many ages. Look them up on Google them, and you will find a lot of information. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing and on-air production.